Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Thank you so much for all of your comments, including this one, which I'm not really quite sure of where it's coming from, but I respect it nonetheless. And I read all comments, unless, of course, it's offending individuals or something. But anyway, Greg, I have to stop listening to your programme now. It's like I'm in another country, but I'm in Donegal. I'm a mile from the main road. I'm snowed in, and it looks like no thaw for a few days yet. There'll be no gritter here. I cannot drive out. I will have to walk. There's no bin service here. I couldn't get a delivery of coal or oil if I run out. I know there are others in my position. I live alone. I'm okay. But talk of politicians, if the basic needs of citizens are not addressed, and I know you say this all the time. Right, I'm not sure if you're not listening to the show because you have to head out somewhere or something, but that's what we do in this program. We highlight situations exactly like yours, the people maybe who feel they're being a little bit left behind. We always try and give them a voice, and we've been discussing why Donegal wasn't included in an orange alert. We've been talking about why certain routes aren't gritted. I hope you contacted Donegal County Council, because we had a piece on the program yesterday that if your circumstances are such that maybe their teams or crews could help to get you stuff to you or out of your premises. We've carried bits from local businesses that who are prepared to make deliveries for people exactly in your position. So people like you have been, you know, front and centre of the conversation and our coverage of the weather over the last wee while. Hopefully you won't have to wait a few days for the thaw. I'm sorry that if you have to stop listening, unless it's that you have an appointment or someone calling around, but I wanted to address your point, and I'm sorry you feel like that. A caller says it's the ESB lines and you can't get near them. It's too dangerous. Greg, the reason that there was a lot of power outages is because people were forced to install air-to-water systems, and by not allowing fireplaces in new buildings, this has put a strain on the electricity supply and not a lot to do with fallen lines, etc. Well, we can monitor. There was a lot of pressure on the electricity supply because of no energy being created by wind, which makes up often around a third of our energy resources. And people being at home, heating on and all that kind of stuff. There was no actual outage of Letterkenny. There was no actual outage of electric that was not connected to power lines and what have you. Hi, Greg. The ESB is teams cutting trees all the time, but it's landowners or forestry companies who don't allow them to cut the trees, which is the big problem, which I think we kind of got to that. I think we got to that in our chat. Hi, Greg. Don't forget that all this horse trading is being done with your and my taxpayers' money, because the Fianna Fáil... I've read that one already. Also, do any of your listeners think that the complete lack of infrastructure in Donegal was or is a deliberate policy, as the vast majority of Donegal roads haven't been improved since the late 60s, early 70s, making it a form of silent apartheid? I mean, obviously... You know, there's the road between Bundoran to Donegal Town has been greatly improved over that period of time, from Donegal Town to Ballybuffet. That's a new stretch of road in that period you talk of. Obviously, Glenties, Dunlow, it's easier to get to Donegal Town now. I take your point in how you feel, but you can demonstrate that since the 60s and 70s, there's been an improvement in the infrastructure. Maybe not as far as, it hasn't gone as far as many would like. Elon Musk, entitled Social Media, lies will dominate, and if a lie is told often enough, it seems to become accepted as truth. Wealth is king with these billionaires. If we're not careful, dictators will take over countries. And some of the language of Donald Trump has been, you know, akin to that of a dictator, some would say. I'm not saying that, but some would say it. It's what you believe to be the truth, I think, is one of the issues here. You see, there are groups of individuals that what you believe to be a lie, they genuinely and believe is the truth, and vice versa. So the truth, what is the truth? That's going to be the big challenge to figure out, I think. Hi, Greg. The government has a short memory in regards to election interference. Remember the Lisbon Treaty? I, like many, voted no. Then the government didn't like the result and made us vote again. Democracy at its finest. Thanks, Tony. And a lot of people still have that in the back of their mind. And there was a bit of commentary from opposition parties in terms of going back to the people with a vote. And that did them a great deal of damage. So those memories are still very fresh in people's heads. There can be information on weather put out, which is good to have. But all we have to do is look out the window each morning. This is ridiculous. The constant multi-weather event talk about hamming it up, keeping people in fear, is all it does. But our experience here at Highland Radio is very, very different in that if it was just simply looking out the window, our phones wouldn't be ringing on off the hook all morning, which is fantastic. It's a service we provide. You know, people in Dunloe will say, what's the road like into Letterkenny? People will in Letterkenny will say, what's the road like to Donegal Town? Looking out your window won't answer those questions. So, you know, there was a multi-weather event. And I'm not a big fan of Mataran, but we had snow, we had ice, we had rain, we had wind. But it became politicised for some reason. I don't know why, but I respect your view. There was no real warning, says a listener, regarding the additional snowfalls on Wednesday night going into Thursday. We were yellow and the rest of the country was orange. A bit strange indeed, that seems true. Can you ask Thomas about the government increasing the 5 days off before you can claim your sick money to 10 days? Another hit on the working Irish people. I don't think that one's going to come in. I have a feeling that could end up going by the way. We shall see, but it went from 3 to 5 and I don't think 5 to 10 is going to happen. More of your comments here. The Inishowen Ceilidh due to take place in the GEA clubhouse in Tuir is cancelled tonight. The Ceilidh will now take place on Friday the 17th. A caller says, I have a fella sick for 3 days in bed with flu. It's so bad that he can't get out of bed. I don't know what to do with him. People are unable to cope with being sick as they've never been sick before. He's depressed as he can't go to work or do anything. I can't take him to the hospital as it's flu. What can I do? The aches and pains are terrible. Nurofen, sweat it out, hot drinks, TLC. A lot of us, all Christmas, New Year was written off. For these exact same reasons, there's nasty flu going around. Flu is very serious. A lot of people go, oh, I'm feeling a bit flu-y when they've got a head cold. You know when you've got flu, there's no doubt about it, and your gentleman there does. So it's painkillers regularly for a day until such time as you're not supposed to take them. I don't know the ins and outs of that. Hot drinks, TLC, back rub. I hope you don't think I'm diminishing what he's going through. I'm just saying that those are the best that we can do in the home setting. Thank you for all your questions for Seamus Gunn, who is with us now. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co. Remelton and Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Seamus. Thank you for your time.
Morning, Greg. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well, Seamus. Great to have you back for another year. And, you know, so much. I know you take a real big interest in all things, not least politics. And we'll get to the questions in a moment, but it gives people an opportunity to get their questions in also, though we have hundreds. Watching on with interest, I'm sure, as to what's happening in the United States and, of course, the reach into Irish and European affairs as well?
Yeah, hard not to, Greg, really. We're sort of heading into what I would call more uncharted waters. And the way the world and the speed at which matters are developing and issues arising and the saber rattling that's now starting to come to ring from the United States with Donald Trump now about to take office. It's fascinating to see the way it's been played out, particularly the interaction now with the influences of the major social medias and to how that's going to be maybe used and coming in and stretching the arm into Europe. You'll have some misgivings about that and the way that could be used or maybe even abused. But firstly, though, with Trump, to see what he's throwing out, like about his own ambitions and how the reaction is coming to them in Europe. They're trying to sort of maybe take a softly approach and let's see where this guy's going. But like when he starts eyeing up, you know, he's eyeing up Greenland, he's eyeing up the Panama Canal, he's mentioned about retaking control of it, you know, a new Gulf of America as well. Just throw that
but
in.
The funny thing is, Seamus, I've become used to what to Donald Trump at this point, in that it's clear when he talks of Greenland, he's trying to send a strong message to the Chinese and the Russians. And when he talks about the Panama Canal, that's also a very strong message to the Chinese because he believes they've undue influence in relation to that. The Canadian situation, I struggle a little bit to figure that one out. But I think he's more than saber rattling. He's sort of setting the tone for negotiations for when he's actually in power.
Well, I mean, yes, but why I define it as saber rattling is what negotiations has he to do, or what business is his and does he have in the likes of Greenland, for example? I mean, we've talked about Canada. It was even mooted to 50, become the 51st state. Obviously, that's a competition thing with tariffs, etc. But for negotiations, there's no trade negotiations going to be needed with Greenland. Greenland has a lot of minerals, and it's rich in that respect. And there's not very many people living there. It's nearly 2 million, I think, plus square kilometres in size, the biggest island in the world. It's autonomous. It's under Denmark. So now we come into Europe and say, well, look at that's another country. And he's stretching out a little bit further. Now, the question is this. Is he sounding a little bit like Putin? And Putin has kind of said to him, look, we're watching you in Greenland here. Now, when you say it's for negotiations, well, he can, within his 50 states, plus Colombia, he has enough there, or he should
have
enough
believes
there to
manage. But he believes the Russians...
He's distracting, I think, from the internal big issues in America that are there to be tackled, and looking out otherwise, and taking the attention away from that before he takes up office. So there's, but the big issue, and this just was incredible, the likes of the people that are now kowtowing to him. Well, we know Musk jumped on board just, you know, by the time of the elections, and now they're their best mates, et cetera, et cetera. But Musk has 200, maybe million plus followers out there that were a beneficial at the time of the election, again, for Trump, no doubt, to use that. But then you have Mark Zuckerberg, who banned him after, I could be wrong about this, but in 2021 after Capitol Hill.
2018, was it not 2018? He originally banned him under pressure from, as Mark Zuckerberg described it, the legacy media.
Well, it was following Capitol Hill.
Right, okay, that would be, yeah.
But he certainly was censored after Capitol Hill, and he there was eliminated at that point from Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg, it is reported, has trumped up, pardon the pun, $1 million into the coffers for the inauguration service, which will be coming up now in a matter of 10 days' time. And now he's watering down this thing about regulations, too heavily regulated, and he's starting to sound a little bit more like Elon
but
Musk.
But are we overregulated in Europe? Because
two of the biggest players in the world.
Because Mark Zuckerberg has said that he said that he was influenced, that the media and governments controlled him, and he regrets that, and he believes the right to free expression, that he fell down a rabbit hole and took that away from the American people, and he believes then that this was due to the influence of particularly European governments that want to overregulate, that want to censor, that want to control the narrative. That speaks to a lot of people out there, Seamus. A lot of people would say, you know, you're right. If I said anything dissenting on X or Facebook, it was shadow banned. I was blocked. I was put in the social media jail cell for a while. This is surely the natural pushback to an overreach of regulation, particularly here in Europe.
Well, it's definitely a pushback. The point, though, that I am emphasising with regard to Zuckerberg is how now he flips. And I believe that is because Trump is now the main man, and he's the guy that he's going to have to run with, and he's the guy he's going to back. And that is just a commercial decision. That has nothing to do with the higher moral ground of what you have alluded to there at all. That's my opinion on that. But I might be wrong. I might be completely wrong. But you talk about the European and the high regulations. You've seen last evening or so Musk done some interview with the alternative Germany or whatever, which is the second biggest right-wing party in Germany. And he's in there now, maybe trying to, potentially there's elections coming up now in February. And if there's an over sort of amplification of any of that broadcast or the content of it, that could be seen to be trying to influence the German election. And we're going down a very slippery slope.
Of course, and also to...
the media. That's what I'm trying to balance here.
But I get you, but where did the balance need to come from? So of course he's backing the ADF in Germany. He's potentially going to financially back reform in Britain. A common theme of a lot of the parties that he supports and a lot of the stances he supports is to tackle immigration, to maintain the sovereignty and culture of countries. He's concerned that Christianity and other religions are being wiped out, a big concern that they have in Canada as well. That resonates with an awful lot of people. And for a very long time, Seamus, you know, media and governments here in Ireland and around the world have been in each other's pockets and have, you know, looked after each other. I'm not sure the antidote to that is social media giants doing it with, doing the same thing. But the bottom line is that for a long time, the people have had the wool pulled over their eyes because of the cozy relationship between the main political parties and often publicly funded media in the various countries. And they're saying, right, you know what, there's another message here. People are entitled to protect their borders. People are entitled to protect their religion, their culture, their way of living. And this is a pushback against all of that.
I think that's a gimme. I don't think anyone... objectively would really argue against that. The point that I think, though, that has to be called out is that where these media platforms are hijacked, as it were, by right-wing rhetoric and speech that can lead to hatred and can lead to violence, and that's an entirely separate matter, but that is what's happening, and that is also out there and as plain as the nose in your face.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So that has to be curbed. And if you over and unfairly amplify a certain message or a certain content, and you have the power to do that, to get it out there to hundreds of millions of people, and it's not true, maybe this is a situation that is false or fake news, and it's put out there to influence people. Mm. That's what I'm getting to, and
that's what you
have to curb, and that's what you have to have control over.
Who is the arbiter of
the
truth?
The fake news
though?
Becomes the real news.
But who is
the
arbiter?
The platforms are no longer of.
Who controls the truth, though? Because we mentioned it earlier on. For years, the likes of a Rupert Murdoch controlled what was the truth, what was real, who was in and out of power, what the people heard on the Sun newspaper, Sky News, and every other platform he ever had. This is not new. It's just individuals with power controlling the narrative and controlling the truth. It's just being done in a different way. I'm not saying it's good. I'm off X because I find it to be an absolute cesspit where I don't know what's real and what's not real any longer. I simply don't, right? But this is not a new concept of an individual wielding incredible power over the public and what is true and what's not true.
Why do you not know, though, now what is true and what is not true? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Why do you not know that? And that is because you have this AI and fake news out there. During the week there was an incident in Dublin with a guy with a firearm or so travelled from, I think, maybe Sligo or somewhere to Dublin, Connolly Station, all over social media. Now, I didn't see it myself, but anyway, there was this narrative put out there that wasn't any way true about it at all. The guy had a firearm on, but he could have had it for a particular legal purpose, and nobody was threatened and there was no actual incident. But there was a total different spin put on that in social media. So that's just a very simple, small, very recent example here in this country, the way that these things can be actually hijacked. And as you said, if it's come to the stage where you don't know the difference between what's true and what's not true, well, years ago, when you had the likes of Rupert Murdoch and you had the print media putting it out there, you were more objective and you maybe sourced other different types of articles on the matter, and you came to an objective maybe conclusion yourself.
Yeah. I'll give you an example
now,
of that,
now
if
you're
that's
being
okay.
Blasted by social media on a particular point with hundreds of millions maybe agreeing, and you say, "Oh, that must be true."
The funny thing is, about social media, a lot of people think when you reference the truth, what's the truth on social media? You think it's about, you know, a left wing view or a right wing view. But say, for instance, even the wildfires at the moment that are going on in California, what you have is lots of people that are taking videos from different places or from the past and repurposing them. And it doesn't matter if it's true or not, because it's about engagement, okay? Because they're getting paid. They're getting paid for their engagement. So you don't know what's... Is this a video that was recorded yesterday, or is this a video from 2018, or is this a video of São Paulo? You don't know that. And that's what I mean by the truth. It's not necessarily someone's opinion. It's just the platforms are awash with people engagement farming with fakeness. And I don't think anyone, whether you're free speech absolutist or you're left wing or whatever you might be, that's the kind of crap that's on there that I can't see the wood for the trees, no pun intended. Not just political opinion and political views. It's just so much content that you don't know. Is that a plane dropping water in California? No, it's not. It's a plane that was doing it in Brazil, and they weren't using water. They were using some other red. Do you get where I'm coming from, Seamus? It's more complex.
I certainly do. And I think that really the right to free speech is fundamental in any democracy and has to be protected. It's people's opinions have a right. They have a right to engage on that, but it's when they are used and abused and put out there in such a way to influence others about a matter which is actually untrue, factually maybe untrue. And there's been lots of those.
Okay.
And then when you carry that to the next stage, and if you get that into the political forum, and you start using that. That huge following, as I said, maybe 200 million, and many would Meta have, you know, so that type of figures, like you're way beyond Rupert Murdoch and
therefore
you can influence an electorate, and then power can change with that on the basis maybe of something that's completely fake.
For sure. I think everyone should be concerned about that, because maybe you're not, because maybe it's on your side now. But that they can pivot, and all of a sudden they're pushing policies and agendas that you're not in agreement with. And then you'll say, wow, this power is crazy. So I think every free thinking person, even if Musk and Zuckerberg's views align with yours now, they may not in 2 or 3 years, and they'll still have that same level of reach and influence, which I think it's something people should be somewhat concerned of, because
we should be reassured here, though, Greg, because we have Michael McGrath now as the EU Justice Commissioner.
That's right.
So, and it'll be up to him, which will be interesting to see can he enforce this Digital Services Act that came in around 22 and but it got going last year. And whether they have the teeth even to do that is questionable. The type of fine, 6% of global turnover. But I mean, the point about that arises with that, which is a bit peculiar, is by the time they find out something has been abused or whatever, over-amplified or put out in a manner that was not, in fact, truthful at all, the election, if it was an election coming up, will be long gone.
Yes,
the benefit will have been obtained long ago.
Of course, but there's billions of euro at stake here. So it's very much in the interest of the likes of Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk to get in place political parties in Europe that are aligned to them, because they then have an influence on the European Council to roll back in a load of this stuff. So everyone's got skin on the game. Seamus, I must get to some questions. I paid money for a Christmas dinner dance. The band rescheduled due to the weather. The rescheduled date does not suit me. I was told that I wasn't entitled to my money back. Am I entitled to my money back? The hotel said that money was towards the deposit in the band, and I feel that I'm entitled to my money back as I didn't receive a product or a service.
It's a very good question, actually, because what's involved in it is really the essence of what would be any contract, and whether in this particular instance you have two sides. And I'm trying to be Solomon, and this is tricky, because the provider of the service, let's say it's a hotel or whatever, they have made the venue available. They've accepted a deposit in good faith, and everything's going ahead. Now there's an issue with the band or whatever that's playing at it. Now, is that a fundamental enough breach of the contract if the band, that they couldn't put in another band that would justify rescinding the contract, saying, oh, no, we're repudiating this. That's sure, we can't have the dinner dance because that's not the band we want. Now, that's really going to, that'll become the question that will maybe determine how this would go, if you were looking at it in a court environment. So, is it worth going down that route? If it's a partial breach of the contract, you might be entitled to some type of damages. The individual or the caller seems to say, well, that date doesn't suit them now. So they've been given even an alternative date with probably that same band. So again, the venue's prepared to sort of honour the contract and comply with it. So I think that I'm just slightly more leaning towards that side on this one. But I can see where the caller's coming from. It might be a situation where, okay, maybe some type of middle ground could be reached, rather than getting involved in very heavy litigation. But the question, I think, that they would be teased out is whether the band not being available and because of weather, probably, if that is a fundamental enough point to be able to repudiate the contract. And I do have my doubts about that.
I was building a house and I gave my original plans to a contractor who hasn't given them back to me. I phoned him to give them back and he says that he will, but he never does. He says he'll get them to me. I've called to his house 3 times now and he hasn't been home. I've been chasing him for 2 months now. These are the original plans with the contractor. I wonder if he lost them.
Yeah, I think that the person that has employed the contractor or builder to carry out the work should be entitled to the plans back. And so why that gives rise to this, it's difficult to surmise as to why there would be some issue on that. What I think is interesting, though, is from the caller's point of view, if they wanted to tease it out, is who actually owns the plans themselves, because the copyright to the plans may very well belong to the architect or engineer who drew them up in the first instance. So they're actually the person, and the individual has a license to use them for the purpose of building their house, but and obviously keep maybe the physical possession of them. But as far as the copyright would be concerned, you know, it could very well be a case that that copyright is still retained by the person who actually drew them up in the first instance. Why there would be an issue or why the contractor would want to hold on to them, it's beyond me, because I don't see them as having any real claim to them at all. And the individual has obviously paid for them in the first instance for the use of them for the building of the house. So it'd be between them and the architects or engineers, and then the copyright, may actually still be retained by the person, the author, the person who drew them up.
All right, unfortunately, time has just caught up on us. Something's popped up. Seamus Gunn, thank you as always for your opinions and your expertise. Thank you. Have a lovely day. Great to have you back on the show for 25, and we'll chat again soon.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Bye, Seamus. We'll be back with more after the break. We're talking about a night that's become a mainstay in the entertainment calendar here in Donegal. If you've never been, you won't fully get it. You need to go because it's amazing. And it's the Hospitality Awards 2025. The Highland Radio Hospitality Awards are back. It's for the second year running, celebrating the very best in Donegal's vibrant hospitality industry. Sean Quinn, Head of Sales, Highland Radio, is with us now. We're back at Jackson's, are we?
We are, Greg. Yeah. Do you know what? I cannot believe that it's a year. And it would be slightly over the year since we did it last year. So last February we went to Jackson's and it was an amazing night. I think everybody in the room had an absolute ball from start to finish. And because of it was such a success, it was very hard to look elsewhere. And I'm delighted to say that, yes, this year we're back in Jackson's.
We're in association with Fulcher Ireland and Donegal County Council. This year the awards will spotlight excellence across 4 key categories: tourism and entertainment, restaurant, pub and bar sector, and the hotel sector as well, which covers an awful lot. That pretty much under subheadings pretty much covers everything to do with hospitality, entertaining, hosting, etc.
Yeah, and it's right, as you said, it's right across the board. There's 40 awards in total, and there's a great variety, Greg. And what we found last year is our nominations came from everywhere, right across the county, north to south to east to west. Everybody was nominating for different businesses, which was great.
And all businesses, which I like about this, are treated equally. There's no hierarchy here as such. You can have your best family venue, your best fish and chips, the pub of the year, the best hotel spa. It's right across the board. Everybody is included.
Absolutely. And that's important too, because let's recognise the hospitality that we have in this county, because it's exceptional. People come and travel and stay over in our hotels, they use our restaurants, they go to our bars. And what we do very, very well, Greg. And it's great to take a night out to appreciate that and respect what people give us, because sometimes you just land in somewhere and you expect. But sometimes it's nice to give back. And I think the night in Jackson's is all about celebration of what we do well in hospitality in Donegal.
Yeah, and one of the fantastic businesses and the individuals behind it celebrated last year was Biddy O'Barnes, Chef of the Year, Best Casual Dining, Best Burger, all thanks to Chris McMenamin, who's with us now. Chris, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, fantastic. And you did really, really well last year. How important is something like this, and particularly when it's driven by your customers, your clients? You know, they are the ones that say, right, you know what? I went in there. The chef was brilliant. I went in there. It was an amazing casual dining experience. I went in there and it was the best burger I ever had. I'm going to go online and vote for this place or this guy. Does that make it extra special?
Oh, it makes it very special. It makes everything we do very worthwhile. We don't come in here just to make money and all that. You know, we put our heart and passion and soul into it, which is very, very important. So get that reflected back through awards and everything like that with yourselves was exceptional. And what a start to the year last year. You know, it really couldn't have been off to a better start.
And a great night out too.
Fantastic night out. Don't you know what I loved about it? Going into Jackson's that night, it's like 400 plus like-minded hospitality people. The interaction, you know, like I've been out of the hotel industry for over 3 years now. So we were reconnecting with all the hotels. You know, it was amazing. We sat in a table beside the Radisson Letterkenny, first time ever meeting them. We connected. We're still connected today. It was an amazing night. And again, fair play to Jackson's because the food and service was first class.
Yeah, indeed. And your business is going from strength to strength, isn't it, Chris? I'm sure when you're coming up with ideas or when you're making a pitch or deciding what to do with business, there's always a risk. But you've got the reward from that risk in providing the type of facilities and nights out and days out and afternoons out that you do.
Yeah, we kind of think outside the box, Greg. You know, we don't just do the same thing every day. We do our chef's tasting nights, and Colin, the co-head chef with me here, he's the brains behind all that. Megan, one of the owners with Aaron, she sets up the rooms exceptionally well. Like, we're all together. We all work together. And it's
now, I
want
to make sure this is true. If anyone's threatening you to say those things, blink twice, and I will get someone over there as soon as possible.
Oh, she's behind there. Don't worry, she's there.
Brilliant stuff. And I've no doubt whatsoever that Billy O'Barnes will be nominated again this year, and we look forward to that process because such is its reputation. And again, just to emphasise that connection between the customer and the business. I think it's really, really, really important. That's what, for me, what makes these awards so special.
Well, that's our philosophy anyway. You know, it has been our philosophy. Just as chefs, we don't think of just the food leaving the past and all that. We have to think of the customer. The welcome is very, very important. That's how the whole experience starts. And the front of house staff, like we believe the food and the service and the welcome is 50-50.
All right, brilliant stuff, Chris. Thanks so very much indeed. Hopefully we'll see you again in Jackson's. And as I say, this is all about the public, and more so this year than ever before.
Yeah, Greg. So what we've done this year is we obviously have our judges, and they have a really difficult task, right? Because we had nearly 16,000 nominations last year, which we scaled down to a smaller number. But what we want to do this year is to change it up a little bit, and we want to bring our listeners into it and the nominations and shortlist customers. So give them the opportunity to vote. So you can nominate, but then you can actually vote within the process as well to try and get them over the line.
So just to whittle that down effectively, you go onto our website right now, highlandradio.com, and you've got 2 weeks to vote for your favourite local business. There are categories and subcategories. If your business that you love and want to support and give a boost to is involved in hospitality, entertainment, service provision in this space, you will find the category for them there. Once we have closed the lines, then we will draw up shortlists in each category. We will still, of course, employ the judges and their expertise in this regard. But at that point, we'll also post the shortlist again to reopen voting for you to endorse that business even further. So it gives you two bites of the cherry and really ensures that the public's fingerprints are all over this process, because that's what we want, that's what the public want, and that's what the businesses want, because it makes, I think, it adds even more pizzazz to coming out on top.
Yeah, it does. And what we've found with all our awards is that businesses who get involved on their social media with this and encourage and share, they benefit because they're actively outsourcing, looking for for nominations, and now they can actually look for votes as well. So if they have been shortlisted, and that'll be around about the 29th of January that we'll actually go out for voting. And there's a window of to roughly about the 10th of February it will close, and then everything then goes to the judges for the final decisions. So it's a great opportunity to get involved, not just for the public and for our listeners, but for the business.
Right, so let's talk categories. I mentioned it could be the best fish and chips. It could be the best family venue. But this is a catch-all. If you're, as I say, if you're involved in hospitality or, you know, service giving in this area, you're going to be, there's going to be a category for you.
There is indeed, Greg, and there's some hotly contested ones as well.
They're all hotly contested, you idiot.
Last year, the hotel of the year was, that was the crescendo of the night. And we had most of the hotels in the county in the room. And it was definitely the one to win last year. Will it be the same this year? I think there's Restaurant of the Year will be up for grabs again. It will be a very interesting one.
Pub of the Year?
Pub of the Year, yeah.
And I think the best family venue is a very interesting one now, because without mentioning any businesses, there's lots of offerings there. And also too, by the way, you know, and we get, the great thing about this is we get nominations from all over the shop, right?
Yeah.
But like, I would know personally amazing family venues that are in rural areas.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to see them nominated as well, because we want, you know, the maybe the more obvious ones in there, right? I can think of five or six. But also there are little, even if it's a community area or whatever it might be, you know, that has a commercial element to it, there are these amazing sort of family venues in different parts of the county as well. We want to hear from all of them. If they mean something to you, if you want to reward them and their staff with recognition, because even getting involved in this, to be nominated, is recognition in and of itself. We want, again, a massive sweep right across the region, Sean.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what, Greg? I think we got it last year, and I think we'll get it again this year.
Definitely.
You know, when you get over 16,000 nominations, that means there's a lot of people getting involved here. But you're right in what you're saying. Every business deserves to be recognised if they do the business that they should be doing. And they obviously do if you're a repeat customer.
Now, don't forget, you can, if it were me, if you're involved in tourism, identify where you believe that you should be, that you feel you fit, and stick it on your social media. Say, listen, guys, hopefully you enjoyed our service throughout 2024. If you did, give us a vote. No, or give us a nomination. There's no. That's a great thing to do. Now, a lot of this is consumer driven, right? But yeah, there's no harm in the businesses to give their fans a little bit of a push on.
Absolutely, go look for it. You know, every business works hard. They're self employed. They're entrepreneurs. There's key staff within businesses. They deserve recognition, Greg. When I'm on here, just wanted to also thank Northwest Gas and SafeTech. They're on board again with us this year in categories. So we're delighted to have them. And our main sponsors, it's great to have Folks Ireland and Donegal County Council on board with us. We're looking forward to working with them in the coming weeks. But from a social point of view, check out our social media pages. We will start posting up information about how to vote. It's really simple. It takes about 2 minutes to do it. Click the link and tell us a little bit of information about why? Mm. Why would you think this business should win? Because that helps the business, believe it or not. And if it takes you an extra minute to do it, please do it.
So for an example, in the bar and pub section, best beer garden, you know which one you're thinking. The country bar of the year, the best bar food, the best pint of Guinness, the best cocktail, the best late night bar, and then overall the pub of the year. So you can get a sense of what we're talking about here. If you go to a place and you go, you know what, I really love this element of it, support that business. It's really, really, it costs very little just in terms of a small amount of your time, and it could really give that business a great, great boost. So go on to our website, highlandradio.com. You don't have to write an essay, but a few words endorsing the business is good as well, and helps us whittle it down. But for now, Sean, I'm sure we'll talk about it again. But one of the biggest nights of the year is scheduled now. Jackson's Hotel. The voting is open for the Hospitality Awards 2025. Check out highlandradio.com.
You couldn't put it any better, Greg. Let's see people on, and let's reward these businesses. And thanks a million. And as I said, we will update you in due course in a few weeks' time.